You're listening to a State of Opportunity special, When Neighbors Say More Than Hello. When you decide where you're going to live, you're getting more than the home, the condo, or the apartment. You're getting a neighborhood and the people in it. On the corner of South Washington and Garden Street in Lansing, you'll find a brown sign with the words, Welcome to Fabulous Acres Neighborhood, painted in bright yellow letters. The community is just south of where the Diamond Rio plant once turned out its cars and trucks. By January 1980, that plant had been torn down. But Fabulous Acres lives on. That's largely thanks to the efforts of residents. They've worked hard to build a safe and vibrant neighborhood. Within just a few blocks, you'll find three urban gardens, a park with a playground and picnic tables, and Village Summit, a foreclosed home that's been turned into a micro-community center. State of Opportunity producer April Van Buren took a trip to Lansing to see just what these neighbors have built.
If you want to get to know Fabulous Acres, you have to start at Miss Dottie's house.
Hi, Dottie.
How are you?
Yes. Hi, nice to meet you.
Dottie Armstrong has lived in the neighborhood for 36 years. And even on this cold, drizzly day, she seems excited to show it off.
Okay, where do you want to start it?
We walk a few houses down and arrive at our first stop on the unofficial Fabulous Acres tour.
This garden right here is called 123 Angel Garden.
She points out an angel figure in the crook of one of the trees.
And the angel is for all the neighbors. Every time I plant a plant, I plant it in memory and, you know, pray over it and stuff like that of the people in the neighborhood who've passed.
Armstrong walks me through the remnants of this summer's crops. There are still a few jalapeno peppers holding on in late October. She hands me a couple and then reaches down and pulls out a large, lumpy mass covered in dirt.
This is my first year doing potatoes. I'm amazed. Never thought I could get a potato to grow. These are my potatoes.
Wow, they're big.
I'm going to take that one home and eat it today.
Armstrong takes a lot of pride in this garden, but she's quick to tell me it isn't something she could do on her own. All summer long, people from the neighborhood come by to help plant and pull weeds.
And the kids will come down here, little kids who've never planted anything in their life. Oh, Miss Dottie, you're in the garden? Let's go in the garden. So a lot of this work I contribute to those little kids.
Everyone pitches in a little work and then gets a share of whatever grows. That seems to be how a lot of things work here in Fabulous Acres. Take, for example, the park that sits across from Armstrong's house. It used to be an old factory parking lot littered with broken glass.
So everybody got together, kept going, city council, kept going, hey, we got this patch of land. Diamond Reel's not there anymore. Why can't we have it?
Today, it's a park with colorful playground equipment, a couple of picnic tables, and a grill that gets fired up at every neighborhood block party. On summer evenings, Armstrong says you'll often find her right here, surrounded by just about everybody's kids.
When I sit in the park, people let their kids out like, Miss Dottie's in the park, so everybody, kids, you can go outside now. When I leave the park, all the kids go home. I said, I didn't sign up for this, but they know I'm a sucker for the kids, so.
Like Armstrong, a lot of the families in the neighborhood have lived here for decades. As we walk down the street, Armstrong points to each house we pass.
Sarah lives there. She's been here forever. Bessie Lightfoot, my sister from another mother, lives there.
It was that same sense of community that first attracted Marcus Brown to Fabulous Acres over 20 years ago.
This was a beautiful neighborhood, and it was a community in the sense that people knew that they could borrow from each other or they can go to each other for a lot of different things.
As a teacher in the public schools, Brown wanted to live in the same neighborhood as his students. He says kids knew they could always stop by his house to borrow a book or a chessboard or get some help on their homework. In 2008, he decided to take that a step further. Brown cashed in some of his retirement savings and bought the foreclosed house next door. Then he started making renovations to convert it into a community center. Pretty soon, the whole neighborhood was pitching in.
And people started coming in. Oh, I'm going to help paint this room right here. I'm going to redo these floors right here. I'm going to help build this handicap ramp. I'm going to help do the landscaping here. So it became something that people took possession of.
On the front of the house, a wooden sign with brightly colored letters spells out Village Summit. Brown named it after the old proverb about raising a child. And the center lives up to the name. Neighbors volunteer to organize winter coat drives, Halloween parties, and Easter egg hunts. Kids drop in to use the computer and borrow books from the center's library. At 4 o'clock, Dottie Armstrong walks to the corner to greet kids for the first day of afternoon tutoring. While we're waiting for the bus, she tells me about a recent call she got from her son. He lives in Nashville. He was trying to convince her to move. She politely declined.
I said, I'm going to be like Redman. I'm going to stay in the hood. This is my home. I said, I lived here. I basically grew up here, and you'll probably carry me out of here. I wouldn't care if I had $1 trillion, because when I was sick, when my mom died, these people cared for me. These people took care of me.
Fabulous Acres, she tells me, is her ungated, gated community. For State of Opportunity, I'm April Van Buren.
Longtime residents Dottie Canty Armstrong and Marcus Brown are here with us now. Dottie, that name, Fabulous Acres, I understand you came up with it?
Well, what happened was that during the time we had community policing, our first community policing officer, his name was Bill Fabianchek. Everybody just adored this guy. He got to where he knew everybody on a first name basis, who your family was, who the kids was, and, you know, really helped the neighborhood. And we were trying to decide on a name. We all collectively got together and was like, well, let's call the neighborhood Fabianchek. He was like, no, no, that just doesn't. We were like, well, what about Fabulous, you know? And everybody just went with Fabulous. Thus, you know, we didn't get Fabianchek, but he's still in there, and thus became Fabulous Acres.
Tell me, Dottie, after all these years of calling it home, how do you describe Fabulous Acres? What makes it special?
Oh, wow, so many different things. The diversity. I not only have my family, but I have extended family, and we all look out for each other. I don't think I would trade it for anything, because I always tell people, if I lived in one of those ritzy neighborhoods, not to knock people who have lots of money, but if I did, I could see in my mind, you know, the burglar coming and moving all my stuff out the house, and the neighbor sitting over there talking about, I thought you were moving out. But if my neighbors in my neighborhood, which is the million-dollar neighborhood to me, if they don't see me within a few hours or a day, they're coming knocking. Somebody better explain where I am and what's going on. And if nobody answers the door, they're coming in.
Marcus, what brought you to Fabulous Acres, and when did you come and call it home?
My wife and I moved to Fabulous Acres in 1995. I was in a doctoral program at MSU, and I was looking for a home to call a home that wouldn't be an apartment where my children could be raised. I know it had a great impact on me to be raised inside of a house as opposed to an apartment. But what I really appreciated about Fabulous Acres when I first got there, it was like almost like a Twilight Zone time warp, and it kind of reminded me of Detroit back in the 70s, or the neighborhood I was raised in on the east side of Detroit. I was raised right outside of Hamtramck in a place called Pole Town that really doesn't exist anymore. You might have a few scattered houses, and there's a lot of farmland now, but it was a crowded, diverse neighborhood with a lot of people in it that had different backgrounds but had a community and family feel to them. And that's what I kind of appreciated. I was like, this is a place where I can raise my children at. And I just started working as a public school teacher at the time. It felt right to me to live inside the community where I would be teaching, and teaching the students who live next door to me.
And so there you have stayed. And we really are looking at your neighborhood because it has such a history of working together and coming up with ideas to make life better for everybody. And I know, Dottie, one of those projects is very special to you. Tell us about the Barb Dean Tot Lot. How did that come to be?
Well, you know, the tot lot, before it became a tot lot, it was a Diamond Reels parking lot. And our kids still played in it. So we'd have to make an effort of constantly going over there, picking up broken glass, trash, etc. A collective effort of people in our neighborhood all got together. And, you know, we went down to city council and kept on bugging them. Was like, you got this piece of land there. There's nothing going on with it. We got a bunch of kids. Can we get this land? And they gave it to us, and thus the park was created. It's called Barb Dean Tot Lot. Now, the funny thing about that is when the park was built, everybody now who was grown was a tot. So now their children and some of their children's children play in that tot lot now. So it really, really means something. And at that time, my godmother was the only Black female that I knew that was alive that had a park named after her.
And another part of the community that's very important is the Village Summit. And Marcus, I know this was your idea, buy the foreclosed house next to you and turn it into a micro community center. Why'd you think the neighborhood needed that?
Well, I had worked as a teacher for close to 20 years when we first opened up the Village Summit, and I had always been saying that, you know, someone needs to do something to help these kids out on the street. Someone needs to do something. Finally, something kicked in my head, and I said, I need to do something. So my wife and I discussed it, and we took our retirement money, even though we're not retired yet, and we bought the house next door and started making major renovations on it. And as we were doing that, the neighborhood started to come together and say, hey, he's building this for the children in the neighborhood, so landscaping started getting done by other neighbors. Other neighbors started to come in and volunteer to do painting or help with the floors or do multiple other things. And it became a community effort. And it's something that I learned and I grew from because having been in the Marine Corps, you take that hero stance sometime. And this right here made me step back from the hero stance and say, no, people don't need someone to come in and fix a problem for them. People need to come together in order to fix the problem. Or you create that sense of entitlement or enablement where people are always expecting someone to fix the problem. So this was the community coming together to help build this community center and also to take ownership of it in order to have something there, a resource there that kids could take advantage of, whether it be with the serving of free lunches, learning how to play chess or guitar, or giving away free books or access to the internet. Was just something that we want to have there where anyone in the community, especially children and families, could take advantage of the resource.
How do you fill it with resources? Do people donate money? Do people say, hey, I've got an extra computer? How do you keep it perking along and keep adding and building to it?
It's mostly been donations from people. We would appreciate more money coming in. We are a nonprofit, but most of the time people will say, hey, my children aren't using these books anymore. We've had a Jackson Insurance Company donate their older computers. You know, a lot of companies flip computers every 2 years, and they've donated computers to us in the past where we've just been able to use a slightly outdated system and just put a patch on it and update on it and have it available to the kids. We have connections with the Book Burrow. We also have connections with Habitat for Humanity and a number of other local organizations that see us as being grassroots and action-oriented. You hear a lot of groups talk about doing different things, but we're actually about taking some type of action.
Dottie, what have you seen the Village Summit mean to Fabulous Acres, to the neighborhood?
When Village Summit came about, it was really a good thing that they kept the name Village because we always lived by the term it takes a village to raise a child. That's what we did. So the name Village Summit just kind of set right in. The house was owned by my godmother's best friend, Mrs. Ford. She would always keep books and stuff around and
she was a librarian.
Let the kids come over and read and give them snacks. I know because I was in that house too. But to see it now with the help of, because, you know, we have a board, you know, Emil Island is our president. We have a great secretary, Lynn Martinez, our treasurer, Sarah Griffin, Marcus's wife, Chitra. She is the in and out. I call her the in and out because she does this thing, which I think is really cute. She'll come in and say, everybody good? You guys need something to eat? All right, I'm out. But she's always there if we need her. You know, she's one of the sweetest people.
I just have to jump in and say, I'm noticing such an amazing ability for you to name everybody. And I dare say there's so many neighborhoods where people might know the name of the person on one side or the other, and that's it. Is that the secret sauce, if you will, that makes Fabulous Acres have really come together to accomplish an awful lot together?
That's one of the things. It's important to us. You know, April, I think her name was, came through, and we did a walkthrough, and I gave her the history of the neighborhood. I felt proud to be able to go and say, okay, this person lives here, this person lives here, this is why this street is this way, or this street is this way, you know. And then to be able to go and then take her to the Village Summit and say, okay, well, this is the Village Summit, but the people who purchased the Village Summit live right next door. Mm-hmm. And everybody kind of gives me their kids. I don't know why, but they just, here, Dottie, Miss Dottie, yeah, you can go. You guys going to the landfill. It's all right, Miss Dottie, taking you. So Marcus has the, you know, the teaching thing where he comes in and probably one of the best chess players I know, even though I don't know how to play chess, you know, but he'll teach a kid how to play chess in a New York minute. But yeah, it's all about family. You know, we consider ourselves family. You know, we don't always agree, but we definitely are there for one another.
Marcus, what do you think other neighborhoods could learn from Fabulous Acres?
I think that the most important thing to learn if you want to change your community It can't be someone looking for a superhero to come in to fix all the problems or looking for a magic pill and everything will be okay here. A lot of problems inside inner city neighborhoods, lower economic neighborhoods, are problems that developed over a number of years. It's going to take time to solve those problems. I think that part of the formula of what we have that brings people together is that we allow contributions from everyone. Someone might not be a great tutor, but they can help us with other resources inside the center, which might be of a financial nature or doing repairs or helping us with gardening. We take contributions not only in the form of books or cash, but we also take people's time and allow them to volunteer and take ownership of the center. We don't turn away any volunteers. We find something for people to do. A small action can have a great reward or a positive return in the world. It's kind of like something that I learned from Rosa Parks, actually. You have someone who makes a small action, a small one decision not to get up, taking a stand by not getting up, and that has an impact on the world. Sometimes those small actions, volunteering your time with a child, teaching a kid how to fish or how to play dominoes or helping them with their math homework, that small one action might be an action that might change that child's world or actually change the world.
Well, the story of Fabulous Acres is a powerful one, and we really want to thank you both, Marcus Brown and Dottie Canty Armstrong. We want to thank you so much for sharing what it is that makes Fabulous Acres so very special. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.